the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toe.
This is the story of Martin Luther. He got up to some pretty adventurous things. He was kidnapped by knights on horseback, lived in disguise in a castle, and helped some nuns escape from a convent by hiding them in barrels. But as a young man, he was troubled by a deep sense that he wasn't right with God.
What you're listening to here is a stop-motion animation that uses Playmobil figures to tell the story of Martin Luther and the Reformation. More than 4,000 individual images are used to depict scenes from Luther's life, including a dramatic, life-changing experience in a thunderstorm.
A lightning bolt nearly struck him, and he thought he was going to die. And he cried out for help to one of the saints, saying rashly, "Save me, and I'll become a monk."
And his life in the monastery, where Luther started reading the Bible.
He discovered that it was God's mercy and love that was all that was needed to be right with God. And for the first time in his life, he found a deep peace with God.
Luther started teaching these ideas at a university in Wittenberg, a small town in Germany, and soon found himself coming up against some of the practices of the Catholic Church, which is the church at the time. And eventually he decided to declare his ideas publicly, and this is what we mark as the start of the Reformation.
He made his complaints public by nailing them to the place in town where people published important documents, the door of the castle church.
This happened on the 31st of October in 1517, 500 years ago. And the story continues. At the time, Luther's ideas caused religious, political, and cultural upheaval. He had to go into hiding at one stage, but even there, he began laying the foundations for an education revolution by translating the New Testament into German. His ideas spread across Europe and around the world.
Our producer, Karen Tong, was in Germany recently, and she brings us this story, 500 Years of Reformation. Later, we'll go on a tour of the Luther Effect exhibition in Berlin.
Here we are now in the sector Korea. We choose Korea for several reasons. One is that it's the boom land of Protestantism. The other thing is that Korea...
But first to Wittenberg, the birthplace of the Reformation.
It's been 500 years since Martin Luther lived in Wittenberg, but his influence can still be felt everywhere. In fact, this small town in East Germany, about an hour from Berlin by train, is officially called Lutherstadt Wittenberg. It's named after him. As you enter the town centre, there are signposts directing you down an alleyway that opens into a courtyard with a clock tower that stretches into the sky. It's the building where Martin Luther lived for more than 30 years, first as a monk, then as a husband to Katharina von Bora and father to their six children. And it's the place where he discovered in the Bible ideas that would eventually lead to the Reformation. A little further down the road is the town church, and this is where I meet a Martin Luther impersonator.
My name is Bernhard Naumann. My job is called church master of the town church St. Mary. Stadtkirche St. Marien zu Wittenberg is a German name.
As a church master, Bernhard opens the doors of the town church every morning, 365 days a year, he tells me. He organises special events and answers any questions visitors may have, which means he knows a lot about this church.
The church is called the Mother Church of the Reformation because of Martin Luther preached more than 30 years. Here we are celebrated the first Protestant Mass at Christmas Day 1521. Here Martin Luther married Casey of Bora, and we have the old baptismal font where the children of Martin Luther were baptized.
The first time Bernhard donned his Martin Luther costume was for a feast held in Wittenberg every year, Martin Luther's marriage. It was a few years ago now when he was asked to do it, and he thought it would be a one-off thing, but then he just kept it going.
For many people, he's a hero of faith or a great professor. and want to show he was a man like you and me. He feels like we do in another time, of course, in another time with another problems. But maybe we can learn a little bit not to say, okay, the times are like the times are. No, we can change the things around us, and that everybody can do it. Martin Luther was at first a small monk only, and step by step then he became that great reformator.
If he was here today, if he was alive in this world, what do you think are some of the things that he might say?
Martin Luther said once, ein Christ muss ein fröhlicher Mensch sein, und wenn er es nicht ist, dann ist er vom Teufel versucht. A Christian had to be friendly. If he's not friendly, then the devil will come to him. So I say, let's be friendly to each other, be friendly people at that world, and then the Lord will give us his peace.
The Lutheran World Federation Centre is just a few minutes' walk from the town church, and it's a big year for them. One of the projects the centre is working on is Luther's Garden. Well, it's actually three gardens spread across Wittenberg. Altogether, there are 500 trees that have been planted in these gardens by Christian groups from around the world. I walked through one of the gardens with Annette Glaubisch, project assistant at the Lutheran World Federation Centre.
Yeah, it was not easy to find a way to celebrate these 500 years of Reformation. And when we thought about that, there was a landscape architect, and he said, why shouldn't we do something with trees? Trees are living, and it could be a good symbol for our faith. And you know, there was this saying of Martin Luther, even if the world would end tomorrow, I still would plant my apple tree today.
Can you tell me where some of the churches have come from?
Yeah, so we have tree sponsors from 92 different countries in the world. Imagine we have about 200 countries in the world. That means half of the countries have a tree here in the Luther Garden. And I remember a little church from Myanmar. They said, it is so great to be part of this whole structure. We are only a small little Lutheran church, and no one in our country recognized us really. But now we are part of this big project.
Yeah, my name is Hans Kösch. I'm a Lutheran pastor, born in the...
Hans is the director of the Lutheran World Federation Centre, and he's lived in Wittenberg for 9 years. But the beautiful small town Wittenberg is today, with its colourful storefronts and cobblestone paths, was not the same Wittenberg Martin Luther lived in. Hans says it's hard to believe that a world-changing event started in a place like this.
And you have to imagine such a small city was a dirty place. No paved streets at that time. The chicken were running, the children were playing, the pigs were among them. Everything happened in the streets. It was really muddy. And also Luther oftentimes described Wittenberg as an ugly place, dirty place.
Also surprising is the story of how Martin Luther ended up in Wittenberg. At the behest of his father, Luther was studying law at the University of Erfurt. But one day, on his way back to uni after a visit home, he got caught in a thunderstorm.
So then when he was fearing to die in that thunderstorm, he made a vow. Saint Anna, help me and I will become a monk. So he survived, probably without Saint Anna, but the thunderstorm went over. But he was very much committed to his own vow. And then he decided to go to the monastery in Erfurt, knocking at the door and asking for permission to enter there.
To the great disappointment of his father, Martin Luther embarks on this new path as a monk, and he basically becomes fixated on living a righteous life. He reads the Bible more than anyone else in the monastery, prays more than anyone else, and he also practices self-punishment, freezing himself in the snow, beating himself. This was to let the devils out. But Luther was also starting to explore the question of purpose. Why am I here? What am I meant to achieve?
At that time, this vertical dimension was much more in focus than nowadays. Why I am here on Earth? Of course, there is a biological answer, but it is not the whole truth about it. And what is my goal in my life? So this is not answers I can find on this horizontal level. Therefore, I need this spiritual dimension in my life as well.
Eventually, Martin Luther is sent to Wittenberg to teach theology at what was then a new university. And it's here that he stumbles upon a few important sentences in the Bible that completely change his life.
That we are justified by God only by grace, and not by our own deeds. We can pray as much we want, we can be as good as we are, and we can do as much as we are able to do. But this doesn't help us in God's eyes, only that he is looking upon us with grace. That was his discovery. This was the starting point for the Reformation.
First, Martin Luther started to question the practice of indulgences in the church, which was basically a way for people to buy their salvation. This was the complete opposite of what the Bible said about salvation, that it is by grace alone, a free gift from God, that a person is saved. So he starts teaching this in the university, and then he goes public. On the 31st of October, 1517, Martin Luther pins his 95 theses to the door of the castle church. By doing this, he just wanted to start a debate among scholars about the practice of indulgences. But his ideas spread like wildfire all across Germany, Europe, and eventually the world.
Luther's idea of the freedom of a Christian set up a certain understanding of freedom to the people. It was like an awakeness. People understood, oh, we are individuals. We have the right for freedom. And we understand now that we are equal children of God, like our prince, like the emperor. They are not better at all than we are. And from that time onwards, there was no way back here.
At the time, these ideas were revolutionary, not just for the church, but for the social order.
The peasants, they were depending on the landlords and dukes. But then the farmers understood, Luther said, Christian of freedom means we are not under anybody. And then, you know, the peasants' war arose, and therefore Luther became very harsh, sometimes or maybe a little bit too harsh, and he never expected what he started as a religious liberation, that people would understand this is a new concept of a society. This was a misunderstanding at that time.
When Hans says Martin Luther was harsh, he was actually harsh towards the peasants. He understood their plight, but he didn't support their war. Also, Luther recognised that he needed the support of the nobility, the people the peasants were fighting against, to spread his ideas even further. So it was quite complicated, and it wasn't the only controversial aspect of his ideas. Many admirers of Luther today are horrified to read some of the things he wrote about Jewish people.
There's no doubt that Luther in his later times was very, very harsh, rude, unacceptable, talking about Jewish. He was a son of his time, we have to say that. It was not new. Jewish people never were accepted in Middle Europe throughout the centuries. That Luther later then wrote these harsh words and, we only have to say this was absolutely wrong. It is not from a Christian perspective at all, and we can't tolerate that today.
Martin Luther was certainly not without his flaws. But 500 years on, we're still discussing his ideas.
Luther started to question. He always was asking why. Do we do the same nowadays? Or do we accept what others answer to us? Do we question what our governments are telling us? Or are we silent and we say we can't change anything? Luther started to change things. So if we are convinced, we also should continue to ask and not to give up.
So the story goes that 500 years ago, Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the castle church door. The actual door burnt down in 1760, but there's a bronze one in its place now, inscribed with Luther's words. I'm meeting with Steve and Jean Godsell Myers at the castle church. They're from Harleysville, Pennsylvania, in the US. Steve describes it as a small town just outside of Philly. So they're a long way from home.
On a typical day, we're in the center aisleway now. This is the busy street. Groups coming in, groups going out. I always tell people that if you really need to get out of the church fast, the side aisles are like the Autobahn. You get a little, but here, even though there's people behind them, they just stand in awe of, wow, I haven't been in a church, you know, like this.
Steve and Jean have been in Wittenberg for a few months now. They arrived just before Easter. And they're volunteers here, opening the doors of the castle church every day, welcoming visitors and answering questions.
The question that people ask again and again, where is Luther buried? And so he's buried here under the pulpit. Morning. And so this is very important. I'm not sure if Luther were alive, he would think it was important that people see where his bones are laid, but so he's under here. But this is, for many people, very important.
There's someone playing the organ when I arrive, so we head into a quieter room called the sacristy. One of the best parts of their job, both Steve and Jean agree, are the conversations they get to have with travellers who visit the church.
There are people coming into the church as tourists, as local residents, on a journey, maybe not even a faith journey, but they are so moved. It is clear they are working through a sense of reconciliation, anger, frustration, sadness, guilt, concern. And with those people, I might greet them, I might start talking, or I might just see the expression in their face. They are already talking to God. They are talking in their minds to people elsewhere.
Often, people view the church as a museum. Steve and Jean try to help people remember that this church is not a relic. It's actually a functioning church with services and regular times for devotion. It's for people to come and pray and worship, but also to just sit, reflect, and wonder.
Certainly, Luther's focus on a gracious God that accepts us as a first step, and then we respond to that grace. That kernel of understanding that Luther developed is still very relevant today. And people come in, it can be a very ungracious world, and a world that wants to see what you can do, what you can show before it's going to respond to you. And Luther is talking about a God who's much different than that.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. For the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, the German Historical Museum has put on the Luther Effect exhibition in Berlin. It tells a global story of the evolution and revolution, the effect and counter-effect that began with Luther's Reformation in the 1500s and continues to today. Here's our producer, Karen Tong.
When you enter the Luther Effect exhibition, the first thing you see is this visually stunning centrepiece. It looks like a giant double helix that spreads out from the centre of the room to the outer edges. So it also looks like the wings of a bird. Then there's this soundtrack. It's actually a 16-channel piece that's full of Christian sounds. So there are church bells, for example, but the sound has been manipulated so that it only hints at Christianity.
Okay, I'm Hans-Peter Kuhn. I'm an artist based in Berlin, Germany. And the title of the piece is Übergang in German, or in English, transition.
And how did you come up with like this image? Was it something that came quite instantly, or was it like you were thinking about different ideas? How did that come out?
Okay, I was thinking about what is the difference between Catholicism and Protestantism, and one big item for me is I always forget the English word, Beichte auf Englisch. Confession, yes. The Catholics have the confession, the Protestants don't have, at least the modern Protestants don't have. And then I got the idea that the Catholic Church doesn't allow the direct access to God. Everything goes through the institution. You have to go through the institution to get to God. And the Protestants, then Luther and the other Reformed Mothers, said this is impossible. People have to have access to God directly. And so they said this cannot be. It has to be open.
Then he had to turn this idea into an actual work of art.
I came up with the idea to make this path where these walls basically bent over from horizontal to vertical, through which you have to go when you enter into the actual exhibition where the Protestantism is shown. And so you go through this process of the change when you enter. On top of that, as you see, these are bars. So it's a little bit like a prison. Yeah. But I have to admit, I'm an atheist. So for me, religion is a difficult thing. I accept it when people want to believe it is fine with me, but I find it as something that limits. And so this is also in this image.
Even though he's an atheist, Hans-Peter Kuhn can't deny the impact of Martin Luther, the Reformation, and Christianity on his life. It's part of his German identity.
Well, being born and raised in a country that is based on Christian mythology and Christian laws, if you want to call it that way, of course, I am deeply influenced. I mean, you cannot be in a Christian-based community without being influenced by Christian concepts. I mean, take all the laws we have. They are, I mean, don't kill, don't do this, don't do that. Have you heard that before? No, I mean, this is all coming. It's all based on the Bible, basically, or on Christian concepts.
Around the centerpiece, there are rooms filled with paintings, relics, recordings, evidence of Martin Luther's impact around the world. Boris Nietzsche from the German Historical Museum walked me through the exhibition.
Berlin has never been an authentic location. Martin Luther was never in Berlin. So we can't do here something like in Wittenberg or in Eisenach, showing something about the life of Luther. And on the other side, Berlin is a cosmopolitan international city. So we can't just, we didn't want it to focus only on Germany. We wanted to enlarge the view and show Protestantism in the world.
There are four countries featured in this exhibition: Sweden, the US, Tanzania, and Korea. We started with Sweden, one of the first countries in Europe where Lutheranism became the state religion.
And in Sweden, till quite recent, you had to be Lutheran to be a citizen in Sweden and have the full rights. But that has, of course, a few negative aspects as well.
So we're looking at two benches side by side. One's elaborate, and the other is an old wooden box, basically.
Like marrying, that was something good you had to do. And if you were sitting as a married couple in a church, you were sitting on a special bank, a bride was wearing a crown. On the contrary, someone who was living a bad life had to sit on the bank of shame. So there was a very strong social control in life. And that caused a few problems.
There's also a painting that shows the typical life of Sami people, the indigenous people of Sweden. Boris tells me that objects like this are rare because this culture was essentially destroyed by the state church.
The Sami were nomads, they were pagans, and now they had to start becoming Protestants. That meant that they had to change their costumes, the traditions. They need to be settled, because if you're a Protestant, you have to go regularly to a church. That doesn't fit well with a nomadic life. Shamanic rituals were forbidden. Here we can see a shaman still beating the drum, but it's the devil that leads his hand. These drums were destroyed, they were burned. We have one of the few surviving examples still here, but most of them are destroyed. So even in Sweden, it's very difficult to find these shamanic drums.
Boris says his favourite section is the one on Korea. Protestantism is booming in Korea, he says. And what's interesting is that it wasn't brought to Korea by Europeans. It's a movement that started from within.
In the beginning, Protestantism played a very important role in the national identity and the national self-esteem of Korea. The first translation of the Bible into Korean was made not by European missionaries. So the fact that the Bible was translated into Korean very early, at a time where the Korean language was in decline, because it was Chinese, the language for the educated, it introduced education for the masses, especially for women. They had and they learned to read and to write because they wanted to read the Bible. So the Protestantism in Korea has a very very unique history and made a lot of changes there in the whole society. That's why we wanted to show especially Korea.
In one room, there's a series of paintings called The Life of Christ by a Korean artist, Kim Ki Chang.
And he shows the very well-known circle, the life of Christ, but he transformed it, or he puts it into the Korea of the 17th century.
And so for example, the birth of Christ is portrayed as a typical Korean birth. So everyone in the painting is Korean, and there's a chicken in the foreground.
That is an animal that doesn't appear in a European iconography, which is an Asian symbol of awakening. There are not now the three magi kings that bring gifts, but as in Korean tradition, you bring to a wife that has given birth, you bring something to eat. And that is what the women here are doing. So it's not magic kings that are coming to worshipping, it's the women.
So if you keep walking around, it's the whole life of Jesus.
That's the whole life of Jesus, yeah. 40 pictures. And that is corresponding with the normal life of Jesus that everyone knows, just with the transformation that everything is happening in Korea of the 17th century. And that Jesus is Asian and he's represented as a Confucian sage.
Some Korean churches are also involved in the reunification movement in Korea, which is a risky thing to be a part of. There's a banner laid out on the floor that reads, Harvest Peace Agreement instead of Armistice Agreement.
I mean, there's a big connection between Korea and Germany, and that is why Korea is also very interested in the church in Germany. Korea is also a divided country, like Germany was. It is still struggling to get a unification, and the church is playing an important role, and that was the same in the German unification.
Boris says that while Martin Luther and the Reformation are a big part of German history and culture, the ideas that came from it aren't just for Germans or just for Protestants. They're for everyone, because these ideas change the world.
I'm a historian. I'm German. I'm baptized Protestant. And I live in a country, well, in a city and in a country that is very influenced by Martin Luther. So there are quite a lot of connections. And I think it is important for everyone, if you like it or not, or if you believe it or not, to know what are the backgrounds, where do things come from, and why situations now are as they are.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Simon Smart and Justin Toe. And our producer, Karen Tong, who brought us the story of the Reformation, 500 years of it, how it changed the world and continues to have an impact on people's lives today.
If you want to listen to this episode again, or share it with a friend, you'll find links on our website, publicchristianity.org, on Facebook, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just type Life and Faith in the search box to find us. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please do us a favour and leave us a rating and review. It helps us and it helps other people discover our show.
Next week, we continue our exploration of the Reformation from an Australian perspective with highlights from The X Factor in the Reformation, an event hosted by Sydney Ideas and ABC Radio National, The Spirit of Things.